There's something no one tells you about marriage until it's too late. The moment you say, I do, your friends stop calling you for the wild nights out, the late night takeout runs, and the ridiculous unfiltered debates that only single men have. You trade spontaneous road trips for Costco runs, mystery for mortgage payments, and suddenly, the chaos of single life starts to look like freedom dressed in madness. But what happens when a group of married men, tired of pretending they've got it all figured out, starts meeting every Friday night in a dimly lit barbershop to relive their single days? What begins as a series of lighthearted confessions turns into a journey of laughter, betrayal, emotional therapy, and brutally honest truths about love, sex, and survival. This isn't just about being single or married. It's about being real. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Barbershop Pact. Friday night, 8:17 p.m. The air inside Duke's barbershop smelled like clippers, cocoa butter, and trouble. The kind of trouble that came wrapped in cologne, wedding rings, and repressed memories. Duke, the owner, was already on his third Heineken. His gold chain swung gently against a slightly stained barber cape as he leaned against the counter, eyeing the crew gathering in his shop after hours. No cuts tonight, just confessions. "Y'all ready?" he asked, flicking the light switch to dim the harsh fluorescence and replace them with that moody yellow glow only old black barbershops could pull off. The chairs were full. Reggie, married 7 years, 2 kids, emotionally constipated. Tone, on his second marriage, cheating in both directions. Jamal, technically still married, but living in his mother's basement and paying for his wife's boyfriend's Netflix account. Kev, the only single one, a silent observer with a voice like Morgan Freeman and eyes that saw too much. And me? I'm Malik. Been married for 10 years. I created this little circle of therapy, brotherhood, and absolute foolishness because none of us could afford real therapy, and none of us were about to start crying on some random stranger's couch. This question mark, this was better. This was real. We called it the Barbershop Pact. One night a week, one story each. No lies, no judgment. Unless it was hilarious. Duke twisted open another beer. Aight, rules still stand. No interrupting, no calling your wife mid-story, and if you cry, you owe everybody beef patties and ting next week. Everyone laughed, but they also shifted. You could feel the truth trying to get comfortable in the room. Reggie, you up? I said. Reggie shook his head, chuckling. Nah, man. Let me warm up. Let Tone go first. Tone cracked his knuckles like he was about to preach. Bet, he said, sliding forward in the chair. Let me take you all back to my first marriage and the night my ex-wife almost burned my balls off with cayenne pepper. Everyone leaned in. Tone's story, the ghost of girlfriends past. So I'm 26, fresh married, feeling myself, Tone began. She was older, smart, sexy, and had just caught me texting my ex-girlfriend for the third time. Third, Kev muttered under his breath. Tone ignored him. She ain't say nothing. Calm, dead calm. Told me to go shower while she made dinner. Tone paused. Fellas, she cooked pepper shrimp. Extra cayenne. I'm talking vengeance level heat. She told me it was a Jamaican recipe. And you know I'm greedy, so I ate it like it was a race. Duke was already wheezing. 10 minutes later, I'm in the bathroom, pants around my ankles, screaming like a damn banshee. Turns out she rubbed cayenne pepper on my boxers. The whole shop exploded. You lying? Reggie gasped between laughs. No cap, Tone said. I was on the phone with poison control crying like I lost my mama. She stood outside the door saying, this pain is your healing. We couldn't breathe. I wore basketball shorts for 3 weeks, freeballing through life like a monk. As the laughter died down, I looked at Reggie. You ready now? Reggie sighed. Yeah, I got one. And just like that, the room quieted. This wasn't going to be funny. Reggie's story, the text that broke me. It was last year, he said, voice tight. Me and my wife, we weren't doing good. Everything felt like a schedule. Sex felt like an appointment. Arguments were the only passion left. He stared down at his hands. Then one night, she left her phone on the bed while she showered. Silence. I wasn't looking for nothing, I swear, but it lit up, and curiosity became a damn drug. I read the thread. He looked at us, eyes glassy. It was her and her coworker, talking about me, joking about how I don't listen, how he does. She called him her piece. We all sat with it, She never cheated, but that hurt worse. I nodded slowly. You tell her you read it? Yeah, he said. She cried, apologized, said it wasn't what it looked like. He shrugged. But even if she meant it, I never forgot those words. He's my piece. I ain't never been nobody's piece. I'm just a paycheck and a bedtime story to the kids. Duke passed him a drink. No one said a word. It was my turn. I cleared my throat, smiling to lighten the mood. Let me tell y'all about the time I almost got arrested for trying to win my wife back with a mariachi band. Jamal choked on his beer. Malik's story. The mariachi misfire. It was year 3. Big fight. She moved out for 2 weeks. I'm thinking dramatic, romantic, all that. So I hire a mariachi band. Full suits, sombreros, trumpet soloist and all. Pull up to her mama's house at 9 p.m. Everyone leaned in. I forgot 2 things, I said. 1, her mama's neighborhood got a noise curfew. 2, her mama hates Mexicans. Don't ask me why. I don't know. Laughter bubbled, but I kept going. They start playing outside the window. I'm holding roses. Whole Besame Mucho performance in progress. Suddenly floodlights come on. Mama's on the porch with the broom in rage. She starts swatting the trumpet player like he owed her rent. I pause for dramatic effect. Then the cops pull up. I got arrested for disturbing the peace and not having a noise permit. My wife? She laughed so hard she came back home the next day. Said I was a fool, but at least I tried. The whole shop was howling. That was the point of this. You couldn't cry too long when laughter followed grief. That was how we survived. Kev finally spoke. Y'all ever wonder, he said slowly, if women have a spot like this, somewhere they sit down and laugh at how dumb we are? Tone answered, oh, for sure. It's called brunch. We all laughed again, harder this time, even as the hour got late. 10:52 p.m. We locked up, said our goodbyes, but the truth stayed in the chairs long after we left. Echoes of regret and joy braided together like twist-outs left overnight. The barbershop pact wasn't therapy. It wasn't church, but it was honest, and that made it sacred. One by one, the married men stepped back into their real lives, back to wives who would never know just how much was confessed that night, and back to a world where the only freedom left was memory. But we'd be back next Friday. We always came back. Chapter 2. The Silent Rules of Married Men. There's an unwritten code between married men. We don't text, how's your marriage going? We don't ask, are you happy? And we definitely don't bring up the dreams we gave up quietly. Instead, we ask things like, you watching the game tonight? Wifey let you out the house? And the all-time classic, you good? Which means I see you. I know it's hard, but we're both pretending it's not. The second barbershop session started late. Jamal had just come from a mediation hearing with his soon-to-be ex-wife. He walked in with bags under his eyes, a Five Guys cup in one hand, and child support papers folded in the other. Y'all ever feel like divorce is just marriage's final prank? He mumbled as he sank into the chair. Story time, I said, because we all knew. If you didn't talk, it'd rot you from the inside. Jamal's story, the plate that started it all. She threw a plate at my head, Jamal said. That's the whole story? Duke asked, raising an eyebrow. No, Jamal sighed, but it's the beginning. He leaned forward. It was 2 years ago. We were broke, real broke, and I had this stupid pride thing where I couldn't tell her I got laid off. So I'd leave every morning like I was going to work, except I'd just sit in the car driving nowhere. Tone whistled. One day she finds a job app in the trash. She confronts me. I lie again. She says nothing. He paused. Then dinner comes. I'm eating stew peas. I say something slick. She smiles, gets up, clears her plate, and launches it at my face like a discus thrower, missed by an inch. Everyone laughed, but Jamal wasn't done. She sat back down and said, next time, don't lie to the woman who prays for you. We sat in stunned silence. I slept on the couch for a week, not because she made me, but because I knew I didn't deserve her bed. That's the thing about these confessions. They start as jokes and end with silence. It's not because we're sad. It's because we feel seen. Reggie passed him a bottle of white rum. I got one, he said. We turned to him. Reggie's story, the vacation that wasn't. We planned a trip to Turks and Caicos, first one since the kids. I thought this was it. The reset, the moment we'd touch again without yelling about bills. Everyone nodded. We all had a dream like that. We get to the resort. It's paradise, beach, drinks, no kids. He took a slow sip of rum. Night one, we argue over something stupid, sunscreen or flip-flops. It escalates. Day two, she books an excursion by herself. Damn, Kev muttered. She spent the whole day on a catamaran with strangers. I stayed in the hotel room watching Netflix in another country. Pause. You ever been in paradise and still feel alone? Nobody spoke. Night three, Reggie said. I sat on the balcony with a rum punch in my hand. I watched a couple make out in the pool, and I realized I missed being someone's adventure. That line landed like thunder. I was just her responsibility now. We didn't laugh. Not yet. Tone, ever the king of awkward honesty, broke the silence. Damn, y'all got me rethinking this anniversary trip. Laughter rippled just enough to lift the tension. Then came Duke's turn. He usually stayed quiet, a more observer than confessor, but tonight he stood, pulled out his phone, and said, "Let me read y'all something." We waited. Duke's story, the text I never sent. He cleared his throat. I wrote this 5 months ago, never hit send, but I read it sometimes when I forget who I used to be. He began. Hey, I don't even know if this number still works. I'm not trying to mess up your life or mine. I just wanted to say thank you for loving me before the world got loud, for the way you made me laugh in that old Civic with no AC, for sitting on the porch with me when I had nothing but mixtape dreams and a pack of sunflower seeds. I don't want anything from you. Just wanted you to know. I still think of you when I hear Lauryn Hill. He stopped. My wife would kill me if she saw that. But that girl, she was the last person I was before I became this. And sometimes, I miss him. No one clapped. No one joked. Kev just nodded. I think we all got one of those. The silent rules of married men. You don't always love your wife the way you used to. You don't say that out loud. You definitely don't say who you do think about. You pretend your father taught you how to be a man, but really, your failures did. You tell your boys you're good, even when you're not. You miss your single life, but you miss your family 5 minutes after fantasizing about leaving them. At the end of the night, we didn't leave with solutions. Just less weight. And that was enough. The pact wasn't about fixing marriage. It was about surviving it with your soul intact. And every man in that shop had secrets too big for silence. Chapter 3. Side Chicks, Secrets, and the Fantasy Trap. The barbershop was unusually quiet that Friday. Duke had cut the music. The dominoes sat untouched. Nobody grabbed a beer, not even Tone, who normally cracked one before the front gate even locked. The air felt different. Like we'd all agreed to say something we weren't supposed to, but couldn't hold back anymore. Because no matter how real we kept it, there was always one subject we danced around like it was radioactive. Side chicks, the fantasy, the temptation, the shame, the lie. Everyone got quiet when that came up, unless they were still in the middle of it. Then they got real quiet. Y'all ever had one? Kev asked, breaking the silence like a gunshot. Nobody answered at first. Tone finally exhaled. Define had. Duke looked at him sideways. Aight, I said. Let's stop acting holy and just say it. Side chicks ain't about sex. Not really. They're about the version of ourselves we miss. Tone raised his hand. Bruh, say that again and slower so I can put it in a rap. We laughed, but it was true. The fantasy wasn't about the woman. It was about the man you thought you still were. Tone's story, the one I shouldn't have answered. It was a DM, he said. Innocent at first. A hey stranger. Somebody I used to talk to before I got married. Harmless, right? We already knew where this was going. I replied. Of course I did. I was bored, man. At home every day arguing about dirty dishes and screen time. She called me King. Asked if I still wrote music. Told me she missed my voice. Tone leaned forward. I wasn't even attracted to her like that no more, but the way she made me feel, like I still mattered, that was the drug. Duke nodded. Week later, we met at a smoothie place. Nothing happened. We just talked, but it was the best hour of my month. Reggie asked, "You tell your wife?" Hell no, but I blocked the girl after that. Why? Because I started picturing her instead of my wife during sex. Damn. We all shifted in our chairs like the truth made our backs itch. Reggie didn't speak. He just raised his drink like a confession. I knew what that meant, so I jumped in. Malik's story, the trap I set myself. There was a woman at work. Cool, smart, curvy like a Coke bottle, and we always had that eased tension. Everyone leaned in. I was married. She was engaged. But our emails started getting flirty. Then the emails turned into lunch. Then the lunch turned into long hugs. I took a sip. She asked me once, if we met before you got married, would you have picked me? The shop fell silent. I told her yes, and I meant it. That was the moment I knew I was in trouble. Did y'all ever? Jamal asked. Number, but it felt worse somehow, because I loved her, in theory, in a version of my life where I was still single, still selfish, still free. Tone nodded slowly. That's the trap, he said. You start believing your fantasy has less pain than your reality. Reggie's story, the secret that follows me. I did, Reggie said, cheated, once. No one spoke. She was a bartender. I was out with coworkers. My wife was out of town with the kids. I was drunk. I was lonely. I was stupid. He swallowed hard. Next morning, I threw up twice, and not from the alcohol. I couldn't look my kids in the eye for a week. We sat with that. Never told her, never will, but sometimes I think she knows, the way she stares at me when she's too quiet, like she's choosing to pretend she doesn't. Kev finally broke the silence. You ever think she did too? Reggie didn't answer, but his face did. That's the thing about men. We lie with words, but the truth seeps through our silence. We got into a deeper rhythm that night. No jokes, no skits, just scars. And then Jamal dropped the line that shook the room. Jamal's story, the woman who wasn't my wife. She came into my life when I felt invisible, he said. Just got laid off. My wife was cold. We weren't sleeping in the same bed anymore. And this woman, she saw me. Who was she? Duke asked.
My daughter's daycare teacher.
Dead silence. Nothing happened. But it almost did. She hugged me once, just a little too long, and I swear I cried in my car for an hour. Why? I asked. Because it felt like love, and that scared me more than sex would have. He looked up. You know how messed up that is? To feel more emotionally safe with a stranger than your own wife?
No one had an answer for that.
Because that kind of honesty doesn't ask for advice. It just needs space to land. The fantasy trap is real. It sneaks up when you're emotionally tired, sexually ignored, spiritually bored, or just feeling too damn predictable. It whispers that someone out there will understand you better, make you feel younger, want you harder, hear your silence. But it lies, because the side chick ain't real. She's a mirror of who you used to be, not who you are now. And the deeper truth? Most married men don't want to be with their side chick. They want their wife to become her. At the end of the night, nobody looked each other in the eye, not because we were ashamed, but because tonight, we saw parts of ourselves we were afraid to admit even existed. And somehow, that made us brothers in a different kind of way. Chapter 4. Things we can never tell our wives. There's a box every married man keeps, not under the bed, not in the closet, but in the quiet corners of his mind, taped shut with silence and marked "Do not open if you want peace." Inside that box are the things we can never tell our wives, not because we're hiding something evil, not because we're disloyal, but because some truths, once spoken, don't go away. They don't get forgiven. They just linger. So we stay quiet. That Friday, the shop was dim again. Kev brought incense, said it was supposed to purify the space, but it smelled like burnt lemon peel and regret. Reggie had a Bible in his lap. Duke was sipping coffee instead of beer. Jamal came in with headphones, eyes sunken. Tonight wasn't going to be jokes. This was the night we opened our boxes. Tone went first. He didn't wait for permission. Tone's confession, I still fantasize about my freedom. I think about leaving, he said straight up. Not because I don't love her, but because sometimes I miss choosing myself. He looked down at his phone, then back up. Every morning I wake up and my day belongs to somebody else. My time, my energy, my emotions, all spoken for. And I can't breathe sometimes. I sit in the car before I go home just to hear silence. Jamal nodded. The car is the last place a man can cry without being interrupted.
Tone cracked a sad smile. I ain't cried yet, but I've screamed loud with music up so no one hears.
Reggie followed. He didn't even lift his eyes. Reggie's confession. I don't know who I am anymore. When I got married, I thought I was becoming something, but somewhere in the middle of work, bills, daycare, and marriage counseling, I disappeared. He stared at the wall like it owed him answers. My wife knows the father. She knows the provider. But I don't think she knows me, not the boy who used to freestyle in stairwells,
or read poetry in bookstores, I stopped being a dreamer to keep the lights on. Kev asked quietly, "You ever try to bring that back?"
Reggie shook his head.
She rolls her eyes when I mention music, says I'm too old to chase smoke. Silence. That one stung, because we all had a version of that sentence tattooed in our memories.
Duke cleared his throat. We weren't expecting him to talk tonight. He usually passed the mic.
But this time, he stood up and spoke like a man holding something too heavy for too long.
Duke's confession. I'm afraid she doesn't respect me. My wife and I don't argue loud. We argue with silence. And that's worse, because silence gives you time to create your own story.
He paced. I fix things around the house, pay the bills, I don't cheat, I do the right things. But when she looks at me, it's like I'm just there, not a man, just background. He paused.
And it's not about sex, it's about respect. I want her to look at me like I matter, like she admires me, like she still sees something rare in me. We all sat with that.
I can't say that out loud at home, Duke said, because then I sound weak, and when a man sounds weak in his house, he gets treated like furniture.
Kev finally chimed in, voice quiet. Kev's confession. I'm afraid to get married because of y'all. That one made us laugh, but it was a sad laugh, the kind that says you're not wrong. I watch you guys, he said. Good men, solid men, and I hear your pain, and I think, why would I volunteer for this?
He looked at each of us. I've been the side dude. I've been the rebound. I've seen married women cheat. I've seen good marriages fall apart from boredom. I've seen kids raised in war zones disguised as households.
He exhaled. So I asked myself, what's the reward? What's the actual prize? That question hung in the air. Nobody had an answer. I decided to go last,
because I had the kind of confession that didn't come out clean.
Malik's confession. I love someone more than my wife.
Once.
It got quiet. Even the buzzing of the shop lights seemed to pause.
I met her 5 years ago at a conference. She wasn't stunning, but she listened, and she made me laugh like I used to laugh in college. Loud, reckless, free.
I took a breath.
We never touched, never kissed, never even said how we felt. But every night of that trip, I stayed up thinking about her. And every night for months after, I wondered what if. Tone looked over. You ever talk to her again?
One time last year. Randomly bumped into her at a CVS. She had a ring on. I told her I was happily married. She smiled and said, I'm glad we met too late.
I paused. My wife doesn't know. And she never will, because it wasn't about cheating. It was about emotion and that kind of betrayal. It doesn't leave marks, but it leaves shadows.
Some truths don't fit into a wedding vow.
They live in the space between the smiles, in the silence during car rides, in the extra drink you pour after everyone's gone to bed. And even though we never speak them at home, we lay them bare in the barbershop, because we have to. The things we can never tell our wives.
We're tired of being strong.
We miss being wanted, not needed.
We fantasize about simpler lives. We carry emotional bruises we can't explain.
We feel guilt for our thoughts.
We grieve our younger selves in secret.
At the end of the night, we didn't hug, didn't high five, didn't see you next week.
We just looked at each other like men who had survived something holy.
And then we left, one by one. Back to lives where silence was the safest language we knew.
Chapter 5.
When our boys told the truth we couldn't. Daddy, are you mad at mommy again?
That's how it starts. Always. Not with an argument, not with therapy, not even with truth.
It starts when one of your kids asks a question you ain't ready for and says it with the kind of honesty grown men can't afford.
That night we weren't in Duke's shop just talking about women anymore.
We were talking about the mirror, the one we gave birth to. The one who sees past your excuses and into your exhaustion.
Your child.
Let's be real, Reggie said, leaning back in the chair.
Our kids see everything. They might not understand all the details, but they feel it. The tension, the eye rolls, the silence.
Tone nodded. My son told me last week, you don't laugh when mommy's around. Everyone went still.
Jamal shook his head slowly.
My daughter said I sleep too much, but I'm not tired. Just need avoiding life.
That hit different, because it wasn't about marriage anymore. It was about legacy. What were we teaching these little black boys and girls about love, manhood, survival, and worse? What were they learning just by watching us? Jamal's story. The cry I pretended not to hear. She's 7, he said, smart, sharp. But one night I came home late and she was up, sitting on the couch, blanket over her lap like a grandma. He paused.
She said, Mommy cries when you're not here.
Silence fell over the room like fog.
I told her Mommy was just watching a sad movie. She said no, she wasn't. I asked her.
He looked around the room. I didn't know what to say, so I hugged her, and I told her we're all trying to be better, but I ain't even sure I believe that.
Tone sipped something strong and spoke next.
Tone's story, the time my son, made me shut up. Me and my wife were arguing, not loud but heated. I was saying slick stuff and she was matching it. He exhaled.
My son, he's 5, walks in, stands in the doorway like he's been summoned, and he says, y'all need to go sit down. Laughter bubbled but quickly faded.
I looked at him like, who are you talking to? But the crazy thing is, he wasn't wrong.
Tone chuckled. I sat my ass down.
Reggie's story? The stranger in my living room.
My son asked me why I always look sad when I come home. He said it with a straight face. No buildup, no setup, just heartbreak.
I told him I was tired. He said, but you smiled at work in that video Mommy showed me.
He paused. Man, I was at a company cookout, laughing with strangers, and my son looked at that and realized he ain't seen that version of me in months. No one spoke, not even Duke.
Reggie leaned back, hands clasped.
That's when I realized I don't even live in my house, I just passed through.
Then Duke finally spoke, quiet, heavy. Duke's story, my daughter's silence hurt most.
She's 13, he said, old enough to know, young enough to still need me.
He rubbed his beard like he was scraping for words.
I missed her chorus performance. I had a last-minute appointment at the shop. Told her I'd be there. She looked for me.
He looked up.
When I came home, she didn't say a word. Not hi. Not where were you. Just silence.
He breathed deep. That silence. That was her way of telling me I let her down. And I couldn't argue with it. Because she was right. And then it was me. Malik's story. The day my son called me out. My wife and I had been cold for weeks. You know that thing where everything's polite but empty? That. I shifted in the chair.
My son came home with a drawing. Me, him, and his mom. But I was outside the house in the picture.
Kev blinked.
What you mean?
I asked him. He said, Daddy, you always outside. Even when you inside.
That silence came back, like grief in disguise. I laughed, said, that's deep. He said, I learned it from Mommy.
Sometimes kids don't need to yell. They just reflect.
They see what we've stopped looking at.
They say the thing we're too scared to admit.
They become the voice of our guilt, and sometimes the only therapist we trust.
Lessons we learned from our children. Kids always know the truth, even when you don't say it. They'll forgive you, but they won't forget how you made them feel. Silence in the home teaches louder than lectures.
Kids learn love by watching how you treat their mother. They mirror your healing or your pain.
By the end of the night, nobody wanted to go home.
Not because we were running from our families, but because we were finally facing the truth.
That the ones who needed our growth the most weren't our wives. They were our sons, our daughters, our little mirrors with no filters.
And if we didn't change the story, they'd grow up thinking this was normal.
And nothing about this pain should be passed down.
Chapter 6. Barbershop Baptisms.
Every Friday night felt like church without the choir.
No preacher, no pews, no offering plate. But still, men came heavy with sins, searching for some kind of forgiveness.
And for us, the barbershop wasn't just a sanctuary. It was a confessional booth with clippers and cold beers. We called them barbershop baptisms.
Not because we left holy, but because we left lighter. Drenched in truth, soaked in laughter, and covered in enough vulnerability to keep breathing another week. That Friday, Duke had rearranged the chairs into a loose circle. Candles were burning, probably his daughter's idea. And somebody brought incense again, even though it still smelled like regret and burnt lemon peel. But nobody complained. Because tonight we weren't just talking.
We were purging. Tonight ain't about what went wrong, I said, standing in the middle. It's about what we had to unlearn as men just to survive marriage. That hit.
Jamal nodded. Manhood came with bad instructions.
Kev muttered. Hell, some of us never even got the manual.
Tone's unlearning. Real men don't cry.
My pops used to say, toughen up, real men don't cry.
He leaned forward, elbows on knees. So I didn't. Not when my cousin got killed. Not when my mom died. Not even when I lost my first child. Heads turned. Tone nodded slowly.
Yeah, she miscarried at 5 months. I held it in, held her, held the silence. But one day I saw a sock, a baby sock, and I cracked.
No one laughed.
I sat in the shower and wept for 30 minutes like a damn newborn, and it felt holy. Reggie's unlearning, providing ain't parenting. My dad was a provider, paid bills, wore suits, kept the lights on, but he never came to a game, never helped with homework, never asked about my mind. He shook his head. So when I had my kids, I did the same thing. Thought showing up with groceries was enough. He looked up. Until my son had a panic attack and didn't know how to talk to me. Said I always looked busy, like I had no space for his fear. We felt that. I had to learn how to sit, just sit, and be a father, not just a wallet. Jamal's unlearning, apologizing doesn't make you less of a man. My marriage was a war of silence, he said. Both of us waiting on the other to apologize first. He chuckled bitter. One day my daughter spilled juice on my shirt. She cried, said sorry 10 times. I hugged her and said, it's okay, baby. Mistakes happen. He looked around. That night my wife said, you've never told me that before. He swallowed. I realized I'd weaponized pride, used it to stay in control, but I was just scared of admitting I could be wrong. Duke's unlearning. Love ain't control. My dad ran our house like a prison, Duke said. Rules, schedules, punishments. He leaned on the counter. So I did the same. Told myself I was being a leader, but really I was just scared she'd stop needing me if she felt too free. He paused. I had to unlearn that love isn't about power. It's about partnership. If she's walking on eggshells, it ain't love. It's survival. Then it was me. Malik's unlearning. Sex ain't proof of love. I used to think sex meant everything was good, that if she slept with me, we were solid. I smiled sadly. Then we went a month without touching, not out of hate, but because we were disconnected, emotionally bankrupt, we were roommates with matching rings. I looked around. When we finally did, it felt like a performance, not a connection. I took a breath. I had to learn that real intimacy starts outside the bedroom, in small things, in patience, in presence. And then something happened. Kev, the single one, stood up. Kev's reflection, watching y'all, saved me. I've been scared to commit, scared I'd lose myself, scared I'd become y'all. We laughed, but it wasn't mocking. He continued, but hearing y'all admit this stuff, it's wild. You're all still standing, still fighting, still growing. He nodded. That gives me hope. That night we didn't just vent. We cleansed. We broke generational curses with every truth dropped. We baptized each other in lessons nobody taught us, but life forced us to learn. And when we left, we walked a little straighter, carried a little less weight, and maybe, just maybe, loved a little better when we got home. Chapter 7. The night one of us didn't come back. It was supposed to be a regular Friday. Same time, same place, same unspoken understanding that no matter what life threw at us, we'd show up. Because the barbershop wasn't just a space, it was a lifeline. But that night, Reggie's chair stayed empty. No texts, no heads up, just silence. At first, we joked. Probably got kidnapped by his in-laws. Maybe he finally ran away and joined the circus. Or maybe he finally had the talk with his wife, and now he's buried under a pile of throw pillows. But the laughs didn't stick, because deep down, we all knew. Silence is never casual with a man like Reggie. By the second hour, Duke checked his phone again. Still nothing. Jamal sipped his drink slower than usual. He's never missed a night. Tone stood up and started pacing. Kev leaned against the wall, arms crossed. What if something happened for real? I pulled out my phone and tried calling, straight to voicemail. It's a strange thing, how panic creeps in not with screaming, but with quiet. A shift in the air, a weight in your gut. Reggie wasn't just one of the crew. He was the one who never folded. The one who always found a joke after pain. The one who carried us when our own stories got too heavy. And now he was just gone. Let's go check on him, Duke finally said. 5 minutes later, we were in two cars heading to Reggie's spot, a modest townhouse on the east side next to a church and a closed-down gas station. His car was out front. The porch light was on, but nobody answered the door. Tone knocked again, louder. Yo, Reg, it's us. Still nothing. Jamal turned the knob. It wasn't locked. The living room was dark, not messy, not dramatic, just quiet. And there he was, sitting on the floor, back against the wall, eyes open but not focused, a bottle of brown liquor next to him, phone face down beside his leg, TV on mute. Yo, I said gently, Reggie? He blinked, like he'd forgotten he had company. Didn't say a word. Tone walked in slow, sat down across from him. You good, fam?
A long pause, then finally he spoke. No.
And just like that, the truth came pouring out.
Reggie's breaking point.
She said she doesn't love me anymore, he whispered. Been saying it with her eyes for months, but last night she said it with her mouth. Nobody moved. She said I make her feel small, that I only show up halfway, that I'm more present with y'all than I am with her. He laughed, one of those broken laughs you hear in hospital hallways. I didn't even fight it, just sat there, took it.
He looked up at us. I thought I was holding it together. Thought these Friday nights were helping me stay sane, but I think I've just been stalling. There was nothing to fix in that moment.
No quick words, no magical advice.
So we did the only thing real men know how to do when one of their own is drowning.
We sat down beside him.
Duke turned the TV off.
Tone grabbed a water bottle.
Jamal picked up the phone and put it on the charger.
Kev sat on the floor without a word. And I? I leaned back and let the silence work. Sometimes silence ain't about absence. It's about presence.
Reggie spoke again.
I wanted to disappear tonight. Just vanish. Thought about driving until the tank ran out, or maybe worse. That hit hard. Kev said, you should have called. Reggie shook his head. I didn't want y'all to see me like this.
Tone answered softly.
We see you. Every week. You just didn't know we already knew.
That night, the barbershop came to him.
And in a way, it saved his life. We didn't call it an intervention. We didn't use big therapy words. We just stayed.
Stayed until his breathing steadied.
Stayed until his eyes stopped shaking. Stayed until he remembered he wasn't alone. The night one of us didn't come back. We all showed up.
Not with jokes and not with shade, but with truth.
And that was enough. Chapter 8. The lie we all agreed to live. Somewhere between I do and I can't anymore. Every man learns how to smile with a straight face.
We go to work.
We come home. We say, I'm good. And we keep the machine running. But under that, beneath the routines, under the fatherhood, past the anniversaries and counseling and Sunday morning pancakes, is the lie we all agreed to live. That everything's fine. It started small. Reggie came back the next Friday like nothing happened. Fresh haircut, clean Tim's, even brought wings for the group.
And nobody mentioned what went down at his house the week before. Not because we forgot, but because we're men. And sometimes we protect each other with silence.
We dap it up, crack a joke, pretend the breakdown never happened. That's the lie. Fellas, I said, after the laughs died down, let's talk about it. Not the pain, the performance.
Kev raised an eyebrow.
The performance?
Yeah,
I nodded. The role we play so we don't break the image.
Tone exhaled hard.
Hell, I've been acting for 10 years. Deserve an Emmy. Tone's mask, the overachiever. I make more money than I ever thought I would, he said. Got the house, the car, the wife, the kids. Everybody sees me and thinks he made it. He looked around.
But I feel like I'm suffocating in my own success, like I built a mansion just to live in one room, the one where I don't disappoint nobody.
He laughed. Some nights I sit in my garage with the engine off and the music up, just trying to remember who the hell I was before I became a brand.
Jamal's mask, the forgiver.
I tell people I've forgiven my wife for cheating, he said. I even told her I forgave her.
Long pause.
But I haven't.
He shrugged. I sleep beside her. We parent together. We even laugh sometimes. But there's a part of me that still hates the version of her that did it. He stared at the floor.
And I hate myself more for pretending I'm over it. Reggie's mask, the family man. After last week, I went home and told my wife I'd do better, he said. She nodded, said, I've heard that before.
He sighed.
So now I smile harder. I help with the kids more. I fake gratitude so I don't have to face rejection. He looked up. It's like I'm rehearsing being the man she wants, not the man I am.
Duke's mask, the unshakable.
People come to me for strength, he said. Even y'all, this shop is my kingdom, my therapy, my sanctuary.
He paused. But there are nights I sleep on the shop couch just to avoid home. Nights I cry in the back room with clippers still buzzing.
He shrugged. But I don't let it show, because if the rock crumbles, the whole damn mountain falls.
Then it was me, Malik's mask, the storyteller.
I tell stories, I said, make y'all laugh, bring light into the dark.
I looked around,
but sometimes I hide behind the stories. I talk so I don't have to listen to myself. I entertain so I don't have to confess. I sat down.
Truth is, I'm scared I'm not the man I pretend to be. That if I stop performing everything, marriage, fatherhood, legacy, will collapse.
We all sat in it. No jokes this time, just masks falling one by one. Softly, no crashes, no drama, just the quiet sound of men finally breathing, the lie we all agreed to live. That strong means silent, that money equals worth, that forgiveness comes easy, that success means happiness, that if we keep performing, nobody will see the cracks. But cracks don't make you weak, they make you real. And that night, in the safety of faded barber chairs and worn-out clippers, we told the truth for real. No applause and no validation, just release. Chapter 9. The Truth We Owe Our Wives. This wasn't about blame anymore. Not about what they did wrong. Not about the things they said, the nights they turned over and faced the wall, or the times they didn't hear us when we weren't speaking out loud. This chapter, it was about us and the truth we owed them. The women who married us, mothered our children, fought us, forgave us, resented us, and still stayed. Maybe not out of love, maybe out of duty, maybe out of fear, but still, they stayed. And we had some truth to return. That Friday, we sat down different. No drinks, no dominoes, no jokes to start the night, just chairs and truth. I started. I told her I was fine. I said, for years, she'd ask, and I'd say, I'm good, even when I was drowning.
I looked around the room. But the truth is, I've been scared. Scared of losing control. Scared she'll stop seeing me as strong if she knows how fragile I really am. I shook my head.
But I'm tired of pretending. I owe her that truth. Tone followed. I owe her honesty, he said. Not just about where I've been, but where I'm not.
We listened.
I'm not always present. I'm not always patient. And I've made her feel like love is something she has to earn every day.
He looked down. I thought I was giving her strength, but I've been giving her tests. Jamal exhaled hard.
I owe her softness, he said. She's had to be the strong one too many times. He clenched his jaw.
I've shut down emotionally so many times that she stopped coming to me. I owe her a place to rest.
Reggie was next. I owe her thanks, he said. Not just for staying, but for trying, for forgiving the parts of me I refused to fix. He leaned back. I used to think marriage was about being right. Now I know it's about being real.
Duke nodded slowly.
I owe her an apology, he said, for thinking leadership meant control, for thinking providing was enough.
He paused.
She needed a partner. I gave her a supervisor. Then Kev, the only single man that stood up. I don't owe a wife, he said, but I owe every woman I've hurt while trying to figure out who I was. We listened close.
I've played with feelings, with bodies, with expectations. And I've blamed the world for not understanding me.
He nodded. But the truth is, I owe a better version of myself to whoever comes next.
We sat in that for a while. Nobody moved. Nobody reached for a drink.
Nobody cracked a joke.
Because this wasn't for laughs.
This was for the women who gave us a chance to become more, even when we didn't deserve it.
The truth we owe our wives, that we're still learning how to love fully.
That we failed them in silence. That we've worn strength like armor. And shut them out in the process. That we've needed grace and not known how to ask for it.
That we see them now, all of them, and we're finally ready to show all of us.
Before we left that night, we made a pact. Not just to keep meeting,
but to go home and tell one truth we'd never said.
Just one. It didn't have to fix anything. It just had to be real. Because real was the only thing we hadn't tried yet. Chapter 10. The day we broke the cycle. It didn't happen with fireworks. No big speech.
No group hug.
Just a knock on the front door,
a pause in the kitchen,
a slow inhale before finally speaking a truth that had waited years to be said. That's how the cycle broke.
See, cycles don't break in public.
They break in the little moments, like when a man finally says, I'm sorry, and means it, or when he puts his phone down during dinner,
or holds his wife without trying to fix her tears,
or calls his son just to say, I'm proud of you. That's how it starts, and that's how it started for us. The week after our last barbershop session, something shifted.
Tone came home and told his wife, I've been faking happy, and I want to learn how to feel it for real. She didn't say anything at first and just nodded.
Then she touched his face like it was the first time in years, and for the first time, he didn't look away.
Reggie took the kids to the park, solo, no phones, no distractions.
He watched his daughter run through the grass and thought,
she doesn't care about my salary. She just wants me to see her. When he got home, he hugged his wife without a word.
No apology, no performance, just presence. Jamal wrote his wife a letter. 3 pages, no blame, just the raw truth of what he'd buried under years of survival. He left it on her pillow and took the couch, not out of punishment, but because she needed space to read it alone. She came down an hour later, sat beside him and said, "I didn't know you were still in there." Duke took a walk with his daughter. No agenda, just steps. She told him about school, about her favorite YouTuber, about how she hated math. And then, as the sun dropped low, she said, "I like you better when you smile." He smiled wider than he had in years. Kev reached out to a woman he ghosted years ago, not to rekindle, but to apologize, to own his immaturity, to make peace with the version of himself he left behind. She said, "Thank you." That was enough. And me, I came home early. No warning, no plan. Just walked in, kissed my wife on the forehead and said, "I'm done performing. I want to try again, the right way." She stared at me, then she smiled, then she cried. And I held her like the man I used to be. Before the masks, the pressure, the pride. That's how the cycle breaks. Not with a bang, but with men who were never taught how to be soft, learning how to be seen. With fathers becoming whole so their sons don't have to heal from them. With husbands who finally understand that love isn't earned. It's chosen, over and over. The barbershop still meets every Friday. We still tell jokes, still talk trash, still argue over who got the best beard oil. But now, we also ask real questions, say real things, and sometimes, we even cry. Not because we're weak, but because we're finally strong enough to be real. We didn't fix everything. We're still flawed, still figuring it out, still scared some days, but we broke the silence, we broke the performance, and we broke the cycle. That was enough.